Jim and I viewed Christmas with mixed feelings. The good side was the tree and Uncle Jack Finch. Every Christmas Eve day, we met Uncle Jack at Macon Junction, and he would spend a week with us. A flip of the coin revealed the uncompromising lineaments of Aunt Alexandra and Frances. I suppose I should include Uncle Jimmy, Aunt Alexandra's husband, but as he never spoke a word to me in my life except to say, "Get off the fence," once, I never saw any reason to take notice of him. Neither did Aunt Alexandra. Long ago, in a burst of friendliness, Auntie and Uncle Jimmy produced a son named Henry, who left home as soon as was humanly possible, married, and produced Frances. Henry and his wife deposited Frances at his grandparents' every Christmas, then pursued their own pleasures. No amount of sighing could induce Atticus to let us spend Christmas Day at home. We went to Finch's Landing every Christmas in my memory. The fact that Auntie was a good cook was some compensation for being forced to spend a religious holiday with Francis Hancock. He was a year older than I, and I avoided him on principle. He enjoyed everything I disapproved of and disliked my ingenuous diversions. Aunt Alexandra was Atticus's sister, but when Jim told me about changelings and siblings, I decided that she had been swapped at birth, that my grandparents had perhaps received a Crawford instead of a Finch. Had I ever harbored the mystical notions about mountains that seemed to obsess lawyers and judges, Aunt Alexandra would have been analogous to Mount Everest. Throughout my early life, she was cold and there. When Uncle Jack jumped down from the train Christmas Eve day, we had to wait for the porter to hand him two long packages. Jim and I always thought it funny when Uncle Jack pecked Atticus on the cheek. They were the only two men we ever saw kiss each other. Uncle Jack shook hands with Jim and swung me high, but not high enough. Uncle Jack was a head shorter than Atticus, the baby of the family. He was younger than Aunt Alexandra. He and Auntie looked alike, but Uncle Jack made better use of his face. We were never wary of his sharp nose and chin. He was one of the few men of science who never terrified me, probably because he never behaved like a doctor. Whenever he performed a minor service for Jim and me, as removing a splinter from a foot, he would tell us exactly what he was going to do, give us an estimation of how much it would hurt, and explain the use of any tongs he employed. One Christmas, I lurked in corners nursing a twisted splinter in my foot, permitting no one to come near me. When Uncle Jack caught me, he kept me laughing about a preacher who hated going to church so much that every day he stood at his gate in his dressing gown, smoking a hookah and delivering 5-minute sermons to any passers-by who desired spiritual comfort. I interrupted to make Uncle Jack let me know when he would pull it out, but he held up a bloody splinter in a pair of tweezers and said he yanked it while I was laughing. That was what was known as relativity. "What's in those packages?" I asked him, pointing to the long, thin parcels the porter had given him. "None of your business," he said. Jim said, "How's Rose Almer?" Rose Almer was Uncle Jack's cat. She was a beautiful yellow female. Uncle Jack said was one of the few women he could stand permanently. He reached into his coat pocket and brought out some snapshots. We admired them. "She's getting fat," I said. "I should think so. She eats all the leftover fingers and ears from the hospital." "Oh, that's a damn story," I said. "I beg your pardon." Atticus said, "Don't pay any attention to her, Jack. She's trying you out. Cal says she's been cussing fluently for a week now." Uncle Jack raised his eyebrows and said nothing. I was proceeding on the dim theory, aside from the innate attractiveness of such words, that if Atticus discovered I had picked them up at school, he wouldn't make me go. But at supper that evening, when I asked him to pass me the damn ham, please, Uncle Jack pointed at me. "See me afterwards, young lady," he said. When supper was over, Uncle Jack went to the living room and sat down. He slapped his thighs for me to come sit on his lap. I liked to smell him. He was like a bottle of alcohol and something pleasantly sweet. He pushed back my bangs and looked at me. "You're more like Atticus than your mother," he said. "You're also growing out of your pants a little. I reckon they fit all right. You like words like damn and hell now, don't you?" I said, "I reckon so." "Well, I don't," said Uncle Jack. "Not unless there's extreme provocation connected with them. I'll be here a week, and I don't want to hear any words like that while I'm here. Scout, you'll get in trouble if you go around saying things like that. You want to grow up to be a lady, don't you?" I said, "Not particularly." "Of course you do. Now let's get to the tree." We decorated the tree until bedtime, and that night I dreamed of the two long packages for Jim and me. Next morning, Jim and I dived for them. They were from Atticus, who had written Uncle Jack to get them for us, and they were what we had asked for. "Don't point them in the house," said Atticus when Jim aimed at a picture on the wall. "You'll have to teach him to shoot," said Uncle Jack. "That's your job," said Atticus. I merely bowed to the inevitable. It took Atticus's courtroom voice to drag us away from the tree. He declined to let us take our air rifles to the landing. I had already begun to think of shooting Francis, and said if we made one false move, he'd take them away from us for good.